Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
For today's show, we have a quick update.
Then we'll be discussing magical tools and their uses in American traditions.
Then we'll finish up with witchcraft and spelled out. All right. Well, thanks for joining us here on New World Witchery today. The first thing I'd like to talk about is that I have a quick update, announcement sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We will be having a hiatus of sorts for the months of June and July here on New World Witchery.
Yeah, Corey is actually going to get his master's.
Woohoo!
So that's awesome. And but, you know, he really needs to focus on that, and he'll be out of town, so...
Yeah, so I'll be away from recording equipment and computers for most of June, most of July, during which time
mm-hmm.
we won't really be able to do regular podcasting.
Right.
If we can, hopefully we'll get maybe a special or two out.
Hopefully
during that time, if I'm not too overwhelmed with
cool.
Yes, the fantastic works of Samuel Johnson and William Shakespeare. Yes, yes, I lead a thrilling life, people.
But, so anyway, that's a little sad, but it's only 2 months, and it'll be a nice break for us to gather our thoughts and get some great new topics. And
yeah, and then we definitely have some good plans for a few future topics that should mean that we come back with kind of a bang after that hiatus.
Right, so...
But blog updates will be also infrequent at best during that time. So please don't hate us. Please don't throw rotten fruit at us.
Taking a summer vacation, pretty much.
It is. It's sort of like a summer vacation, but we are definitely not pot fading.
Right.
We will be back. We've got plans for future episodes. This is just one of those things where I've got to put in some serious time and effort to focus on school during that time. So, right. And I'm not going to make Lane do all this by herself.
No, I don't think I could.
That could be an interesting challenge. Like, Lane, produce an entire episode entirely by yourself.
Okay, so anyway.
So
let's get down to our discussion.
Yes, what are we discussing today, Lane?
Today, we're talking about magical tools.
Ooh.
But not just any magical tools, because everybody knows about, you know, wands or an athame or a chalice. But what about American tools? What about New World Witchery tools?
It's funny, like, before we started having this discussion, I didn't realize how like, all of the main Wiccan tools, like you were mentioning,
mm-hmm.
the chalice and the athame and the pentacle,
mm-hmm.
It's not that there is no way that they would ever be used in American witchcraft, but, you know, looking at examples of them, they don't really show up.
No, they don't.
So it's interesting to me that New World Witchery... or rather, the different American traditions of magic don't really use any of those. So what do they use? That is what we're here to answer today.
That's right.
All right. So what do you want to start with?
I think brooms.
Ooh, brooms.
Which I love.
Or besoms, or besoms, or however you want to pronounce it.
I usually say besoms.
Basems, that's a new one.
Really?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know where I thought to say it that way, but...
I always see it in books, and the way I hear it in my head is besoms. But I mean, I've heard authentic, you know, practitioners call them besoms, and I have no idea how it's actually pronounced.
Right, so we'll just go with our separate ones, and that's fine.
Or we'll just call them brooms.
Or they can just be brooms. We cannot be pretentious.
Exactly. When we're talking about magical tools here, people, we mean that we are tools. And we're magical. Also known as magical douchebags. No.
Okay, so brooms.
Brooms definitely have a place in American magic.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that pops to mind is in African-American traditions, a couple was considered married if they jumped the broom.
Mm-hmm. I jumped the broom.
You did jump the broom. That's fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, we had a hand basting, like a Wiccan ceremony. That was part of it.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
I love that. I think it's a great tradition.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
There are also traditions that involve, for example, you would place a broom above or behind or in near proximity to a door to prevent something from harming you. It's very, very common. I know there's something about if you leave a place and you've had a broom that's been protecting your home, you have to break that broom before you leave.
Really?
And either bury it on the property or destroy it in some way before you leave. You can't take it to the new home.
Never heard that.
Well, I have, so I'm right.
No, damn it, I'm right.
You're just making it up, Corey. That's not true, Lane. But
no, that's really interesting, though. Why is that? Because the broom is, like, special to that house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has something to do with that broom sort of being a household spirit.
Oh, okay.
For that specific house. I'm trying to think of some more concrete examples of that. But I know that when you craft a broom for a new home, not supposed to bring a new broom. No, you're not supposed to bring an old broom into a new home. Because if you do, you bring any of the troubles that you've brought from a previous home into your new home.
What if it was a very harmonious home, though, and you just needed to move for some reason?
Apparently, same thing. I mean, it would still bring any troubles that might have been in that previous home will come with you. I'd have to look into that a little bit more, but I do know that there's definitely a strong tradition of when you leave, you destroy that broom.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, there's that.
Well, there's also, you know, the pretty literal use of a broom.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, necessarily sweeping up dirt, but, like, sweeping up energy, you know, bad energy. You know, like, you can use it to clear, like, a sacred space, to use a Wiccan term. You know, to have a place to practice, you know, to sort of make it neutral again, I guess.
Absolutely. And I know definitely in hoodoo, there's just a whole huge section of hoodoo devoted entirely to magical cleaning. And a big part of that is you clean your house in a specific way. And part of that is sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
And you sweep from the back of the house to the front.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, in hoodoo, though, there's a lot of, like, if you get someone's footprint, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely wouldn't want to have any dirt laying in your house because
that'd
be a good way to get it.
So. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I wouldn't have even thought of that. It makes me want to clean my house more. Not that I shouldn't do that. I can clean my house more anyway. Oh, heavens.
If your house is dirty, I live in a pigsty. Okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if somebody came into my home and were like hoodoo savvy, they would like be like, yes, this is a plethora of material. I shall curse him easily and quickly. In fact, they would wind up cursing my cats.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the majority of my dirt, is their hair. So, yeah, so that's brooms. Oh, there is one thing about brooms. There's this saying, this sort of proverb about brooms that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard it mostly from an English context, but I think it also has come over and been incorporated into America. But the phrase is, a new broom sweeps clean, but the old one knows the corners.
Oh.
And I love that. I think of that all the time.
Interesting.
It's just a really neat proverb or little phrase.
Yeah.
All right, so that's brooms. What's next?
How about cauldrons?
Cauldrons. Yes, into the bubbling brew you go, my pretty. All right, so how do we use cauldrons in American witchcraft?
I've never really used a cauldron.
Why not?
Personally, I think we have. That wasn't when we were doing very American stuff.
No, it's much more European.
Yeah. So you tell me, sir.
All right. Well, I will tell you. You will listen.
We're all sassy tonight.
I know. What's up with that? Anywho, cauldrons. In American traditional witchcraft, I would say you probably see them mostly used to concoct potions and things like that.
Well, I've seen it for scrying, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I see no reason why you couldn't use it for scrying. It works kind of in that Black Mirror format. A lot of the cauldrons here aren't so much the big, you know, bulbous things. They're basically Dutch ovens.
Right.
You know,
that's what I think of.
Bigger Dutch ovens. And I know that there are a few rituals that are done specifically with cauldrons. There's one we'll kind of get to in a second, having to do with the procurement of a very specific magical animal item.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very specific use of that cauldron, and I'm not... And I, P.S. Do not recommend that, but we'll get to that in a second.
Right.
Let's see. Also, because cauldrons are made usually of cast iron, they can be used as protective implements.
Oh, good point.
Do you remember Stephanie in our last episode was talking about how her grandmother kept a lot of her pans, pots and pans, up on the wall?
Right.
Pots and pans kind of in that same category as cauldrons, especially iron ones, are used to protect certain areas for magical interference or invasion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of old homes, if you look at the chimney area especially, you'll see the pots and pans lined up on the chimney because that was a place where witches would be frequently trying to get in and out of your house. Because witches are a lot like Santa Claus. Only they don't leave presents, they leave evil. Anywho, so yeah, that's cauldrons, I'd say.
Yeah.
All right, next.
Let's go with animal parts.
The bits and bobs. Well, I should probably start off then, since we were just talking about cauldrons, I'll go ahead and get this one out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
There's the black cat bone. Mm-hmm. Now, the black cat bone, I am presenting this information solely as historical context, absolutely not recommending you do this. This is the kind of stuff that gets, you know, which is a bad rap. It's the kind of stuff that I don't personally think is necessary nowadays,
okay,
as far as modern craft goes. But there is an old hoodoo ceremony, which is inherited from some other European traditions, as well as, I think, some African traditions, that involves taking a black cat at a crossroads at midnight and throwing it alive into a cauldron full of boiling water and closing the lid.
Ugh.
And you boil it until all the flesh falls off the cat and you just have bones left. And then you take the bones from that cat and you can do one of two things with them. You can either take them to a stream and float each bone until you find one that flows against the current, or you can put each bone one by one into your mouth until you turn invisible. And whichever bone either floats against the current or turns you invisible is that magical bone. I believe Zora Neale Hurston made a claim that that was part of a hoodoo initiation ceremony. Most any scholar you talk to, you listen to, is going to say, no, that's sensationalism.
Yeah, I would hope so. That's horrible.
It is horrible. And I know people do use that black cat bone ritual, but I also know that there's no practical reason to use it anymore.
I'm just, animal cruelty really hits hard for me, so I can't even really think about that.
And I have zero problem using these animal parts and pieces. I think that they're actually fantastic magical tools. But I don't like the idea of procuring them from an animal. I don't like the idea of killing an animal solely to procure a magical tool. And I don't like the idea of making that animal suffer for any reason.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is, again, why I am saying, do not, this is my personal admonition, do not do that black cat bone ceremony. It is only historical. It is not a practical piece of advice at all. Do not do it.
Yeah. I don't agree with you there. Okay, so let's move on.
Move on to some other fantastic animal bits and pieces. What are some animal pieces? Let's get into some happier animal pieces. What are some that you know of?
Birdie feathers.
Okay, good.
That's happy.
Generally speaking, you don't have to go out and kill the bird to get the feathers.
Yeah, well, it's usually better if they're found, not if you know, pluck them from the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. But
what can we use them for?
Let's see. I know raven feathers are pretty potent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for what though.
Hmm. I don't know about an American craft, honestly. I don't know. What the raven feather, because they're such a big European bird.
Right.
And I'm sure
crow,
there are. Crow would be the same thing. I know that you can weave feathers, goose feathers show up a lot, into a cord and make a witch's ladder.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's used, you can use it to place a curse or to control somebody.
Why feathers, though?
You know, I honestly don't know the reasoning behind the feathers.
It's kind of odd.
Well, I assume, and this is kind of going off on just a tangential limb here, but I sort of assume that with goose feathers, there's an association with Mother Hulda, Frau Holle, who was the goose woman.
Yeah.
Mother Goose.
Never thought about that. But isn't that European?
That is very European. That's why I'm saying, like, I think that it really stems from that European source.
Okay.
And so you're using her power, and she was a very liminal figure in terms of she, yes, she could grant a lot of favors, but there's this darker side to her as well.
Interesting.
So there's that. And then if you're using the raven feathers in that same context, ravens were associated with a lot of war gods and goddesses and, mm-hmm. and some very potent magic as well. Odin had the two ravens that would fly around the world every day and report back to him with the news.
Cool.
So as far as that's concerned, I would say in American craft, you would still use feathers, but you would probably use them. Maybe if you were trying to send somebody away, you could use them to get them to sort of fly away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take flight.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
What about like specific birds? Can you think of a way to use specific, like maybe a cardinal or like a blue jay? Because they're really vibrant colored.
Right. I think that might have, well, I know peacocks. Mm. Peacocks have a lot to do with like vanity.
Yeah. I've heard it's really bad luck to have a peacock feather in your home.
And I've heard it's bad luck, and I've also heard it's good luck because they have the eye.
Right.
So the eye can repel the evil eye, or it can cause the evil eye. So I've heard it from a couple different sources, different traditions.
Interesting.
But I know that you can use those peacock feathers in vanity or beauty spells.
Cool.
As well. And I feel like mockingbirds and magpies both have American significance. And the mockingbirds may have to do with deception.
Okay, well that makes sense, because they mock
right.
other well, yes. birds.
Well, and they do something where they try to lead you away from their nest.
Really?
Like they lure you away from their nest by pretending to be injured. I believe that's what the mockingbirds do. It might be the lapwing that does that, actually, but it's one of the two.
I've never heard that for a mockingbird. I've heard that they imitate other birds' calls.
They do that.
Sometimes
very poorly, actually.
Yeah, but they can do, like, car alarms, too, which is awesome.
That's fun.
Yeah, like, if they hear it a lot, then they'll start to do the car alarm.
Mm-hmm. I think they do the imitation calls, which is deceptive. Mm-hmm. You know, you're deceiving them.
Yep.
So they're sort of the American version of the lapwing
okay.
in that way.
So right. let's see. So what's some other animals?
Other fun animals. Toad bones, getting back into sad animal abuse things.
Yeah.
Toad bones are similar to cat bones as far as procurement. You have to do something kind of mean to the toad. Somehow the toad doesn't shock me quite as badly as the cat does because I think the toad can be dead when you procure the bone, but
okay.
But at any rate, that's we'll not dwell on that.
Okay, thank you.
So, coondongs, also known as the raccoon penis bone.
Yes,
because raccoons actually have a bone in their penis,
which is very strange, but very magical, evidently.
Yes. So, those are commonly used. Those are more of an ingredient in spells than they are a tool in and of themselves. Although you can, make a bunch of them. And get them together and make them sort of a wind chime.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've seen.
Yeah, in Skeleton Key.
Yeah.
In the movie that we talked about. But like, what is their purpose? Why would you put it into a spell?
So raccoon penis bones would probably be used for love spells.
Obviously.
Makes sense. Lust spells.
Right.
Also fairly obvious. And luck for gambling mm-hmm. is something else we just saw.
Yeah.
And looking at that. I believe I've also seen them used to sort of be a, like, just a positive, like, good luck charm in general.
So, like a rabbit's foot.
Yeah,
no exactly. real reason for it, just...
Exactly. Which brings us to...
Rabbit's feet.
Yeah. Not lucky for the rabbit. Oh,
yeah.
Everyone makes that joke.
Yeah.
It's always bad. I did it. I made that joke. I'm going to go hide myself in the corner now. All right, so tell me, why are rabbits' feet lucky?
I have no idea. I really don't. Do you have any idea?
I know that they are associated with gambling. I assume that it's sort of like the raccoon penis bone. It's a fertility thing because rabbits are fertile.
Right.
Very fertile creatures.
Why does fertile go with lucky, though?
Because you're, becoming, like, you're making your luck fertile. It's sort of like you're making, like, your pocketbook fertile, you're increasing, you're
okay.
causing growth.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that doesn't mean that part actually makes a lot of sense to me. With the raccoon, with the coondong, it's interesting because it's such a very obvious thing, but with the rabbit, it seems it's a little more subtle.
Well, I just keep thinking it's the foot, so like they're very fast and they're very mm-hmm. skittish.
So, and they do get anointed with fast luck oil.
Right.
So it's probably fast luck.
Oh, okay.
Makes total sense.
Well, there we go.
So if you've got a rabbit's foot keychain, just anoint it with a little fast luck oil, and or Van Van would work okay, too.
Mm-hmm. Then you're good to go.
Yeah, be good to go. And then feel free to play the lottery and send us a small percentage. We have a donate button. All right, what else we have?
Gator parts.
Gator bits. I love gator nuggets.
Gator is actually quite tasty.
It is very good. I like it quite a bit. Gator tail. Not the scraps of tire in the road left by a semi-truck.
No, not that.
I wonder if you could use that for hoodoo.
I don't know.
It's interesting. Tangent.
Another tangent. My dad drove a truck for a while, and so they would call to their other truckers, you know, careful, gator on the road, you know, like, mean to watch out. Well, one time, someone had called to him, watch out, gator on the road, like, really? And he was like, no, they're joking. And he gets out, and there's actually a gator on the road.
Well, that's fun.
Like, alive, just, you know, chilling.
And he suddenly decided, in fact, I don't think I'm going to change that tire.
Exactly. But anyway, you can totally cut that, but...
So, gator parts.
Yes.
Most any part of the gator seems to be pretty useful.
Yeah.
The gator's hand is useful for gambling and for luck and most types of increased positivity. Good fortune kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that, because that's not a particularly... You don't think of a gator as being particularly fertile.
No, or fast.
Or fast. Maybe that would have more to do with cunning.
Maybe.
Because gators do that thing where they hide under the surface of the water and then...
Right.
And snap up their winnings. I don't know. I don't know the mechanics of that one. I just do know that they are... That the little paws are considered lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Teeth are protective. Can also be... I think gator teeth can also enhance... male virility.
That kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah. Make a man kind of bitey. gator heads, I know, are used in a lot of swamp conjure.
My brother used to have one of those.
Your brother swamp conjurer?
No, he's not.
I bet he is.
He had the fetus of a shark as well.
Your brother's a hoodoo man waiting to happen.
I know.
Like, you just want to break into his room and steal all his stuff. So yeah, the gator head. I personally have not used a gator head. I would be fascinated to use one. I actually just read a really cool story about the gator part thing.
What? But how would you use a gator head?
I think it might be kind of used the same way that skulls are used in some traditional witchcraft. It's sort of an otherworld contact point. I can't speak to that personally and say I really know that's what they're for, but it's kind of my best guess. I bet Papa Toadbone would actually...
He sells them on his website.
Exactly. So I'm sure he really knows those better than we do. Moving from gators, I think going to snakes pretty quickly. There's a lot of snaky bits that you can use in hoodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Snake sheds are used to make goofer dust in some recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Snake bones can be used to poison a relationship or poison a person. Not literally poison them, although there is a live things in you spell that you can use snake powder, snake bits for.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, if you include snake bones in their mojo sack and it's a harmful mojo sack, then it sort of poisons their life.
Right.
So there's that. They can also be used for luck. They're like, the bones are sort of like rattling dice. So there's a luck side to it.
Well, what about a rattlesnake? I've seen, like, rattlers, you know, the rattle of the snake for sale.
Yes, that is always luck that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing as a rabbit's foot.
Right.
So pretty much if you have an animal bit hanging around your house, probably pretty lucky. So I did recently find out that a dead bird being left on your property is a sign of a hex.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if you find, like, a dead bird that's... Like, not necessarily, like, a bird has hit your window and died.
Right.
But, like, if you can tell that somebody dumped that bird on your property, they might be putting a pretty powerful hex on you.
Oh, so your cats are trying to kill you.
Exactly. But we knew that already. My cats don't catch birds. My cats barely catch bugs.
I guess if you don't have cats and you find a bird on your property, then be worried.
Yeah. But it's definitely interesting to be like, birds. Yeah. Right, anything else?
Not in the animal parts that I can think of. I'm sure there's more, but that's all we're going to talk about.
Okay, so let's go next. You've got down cingulum/cord.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well.
Oh, just well. Well, we've talked a little bit about one use of the cord being for weather magic.
Right.
Where you can knot up winds and untie them together to release winds.
Right.
And I know that was very, very common for sailors to do, especially in the Northeast. I've seen that come up a lot in the folklore.
You wouldn't use that for a cingulum, though. Let's talk about what a cingulum is for people who don't know, because it's more of a European thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Definitely comes from the European.
So it's a ritual garment. Not a garment. A piece of your garment, I guess.
Uh-huh.
You know, you tie it around your waist, and it's, I don't know. It's not there for just decoration.
No. Well, I mean, it's supposed to have taken your measure. It's supposed to have taken the measure of your body in a couple of different dimensions so that your person is tied up in it. And that's where I think it relates to hoodoo, because hoodoo has some very specific spells that involve measuring a person, particularly actually measuring parts of a person. Women would measure their man's their man's penis while it was erect.
Interesting.
And then take that and smear it with seminal fluid, if they could get it. If not, some thing from the man would be smeared on it, and then they could tie it. And by tying it, they would tie his nature so that he can go philandering about.
Oh. How do you do that without him realizing what you're doing?
He would hopefully be asleep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the next time you have sex, you would...
Gotcha.
...collect what you need to collect.
So, okay, cingulum is usually red?
Yes, in European witchcraft traditions.
Yeah. But I've also heard of, black, white, or three strands mm-hmm. of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Black, white, and red.
Yeah, black, white, and red, and mm-hmm. all plied together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what do we use it for exactly? I've never actually used a cingulum.
Mostly it's that ritual garment thing.
Right.
It's that, you know, when you
But
put
I know it
on.
Has a practical side, though, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, again, there's the, once you make your oath with your, and you've had your measure taken by the cingulum, it's the main way of keeping you bound to your oath. Because if you violate your oath, then if your cingulum is harmed, so are you.
Mm.
So there's that aspect of it. I personally have always thought of a cingulum as being kind of one of those, I hate to put it this way, but sort of like a witchy utility belt. Because you can use it to hold other things, if you need to. Or you can untie it. And I would personally use a cingulum as a magical cord.
Yeah, I would too.
So if you want to knot things into it, you can knot spells into your cord.
Right.
But my admonition there is, especially if it's been used to take your own measure,
mm-hmm.
that you would want to only be doing spells that have an effect on you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because they're bound to you at that point. So you wouldn't want, John and Mary down the street, you wouldn't want to necessarily bind their love spell into your cingulum.
Right.
You would create their own cord for them.
Hmm.
That's how I would take that.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got?
All right, this one you know a lot about is the iron implements.
Yes. Primarily two things come to mind here. You've got your iron stuff like your railroad spikes, which are pretty common in magical practice here in the States. And you've got your horseshoes.
Mm-hmm.
The railroad spikes are used in... home protections, and then house blessings.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also be used to repel negativity. One of the things that Jack Montgomery, who wrote American Shamans, one of the things that he mentions is you put something iron under your bed if you think you're being haunted or otherwise harmed by a negative spirit.
Yeah, he said
sends out this breaking up energy, and they can't be around it.
So does it repel or absorb?
It's neither. It just breaks them up. It's sort of like a radio interference.
Oh, okay.
So they can't cohesively hold together and do anything to you.
Gotcha.
So that was something that he mentioned. So I'd say, you can throw a railroad spike or a horseshoe under your bed and get that effect. And that sort of relates back to the cauldrons that we talked about as well.
Yeah.
And then there's a specific spell where you take four railroad spikes to the four corners of your property or the four corners of your house, and you pound them into the ground. And there's a little more to it. There's a blessing that you do with it, and it protects your home.
Mm-hmm. Why railroad spikes?
Because they're basically big nails. Because the way the spell works is actually you start with the railroad spikes at the outer corners, then you go into your house and you use square cut nails, which are kind of big nails, and put those in the four corners of your home. And then in every room, you put in small nails in the four corners. So they work in that way. They're also iron.
Yeah.
They're really easily available. You can walk along any railroad track in the U.S. And if you look down, if you walk for more than 10 minutes, you're going to find four.
Really?
Yeah, because the trains that go through, every time they go through, they're rattling those things so hard.
Right.
That these spikes come popping out all
over
the
place. So do people go through and, like, re-spike a track?
Yeah, they do that a lot.
Okay.
That's, I mean, if you see railroad workers, they're doing that a lot of the time. But, like, I work near a railroad track, and on my, you know, lunch hour, I've gone out there and collected 20 of them.
Wow.
I mean, they're just really easy to find.
Awesome.
So, those are really good. Horseshoes, just really briefly, points up, points down, doesn't seem to matter. It actually goes across the board. Some people say you got to put them up.
I've heard points up because
your luck runs out.
Right, it keeps the luck in.
And there are some people that say that you want that points down because it pours the luck out onto you.
Oh.
So it really doesn't, as far as I can tell, it doesn't matter. It just matters that they have been worn. That you have horseshoes that have been worn.
Right.
They can't be.
That were on a horse.
Yeah. They can't be just, like, recently fabricated for fun.
Right.
But again, they're iron implements. They're all, you know, I see them put on barns a lot to protect the barns. They're putting homes.
That's an old tradition.
Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily hoodoo. I see that in mountain magic a lot.
Yeah.
Rainy magic,
yeah.
Ozark magic.
And not even magic, just people, you know, like, really strict, you know, Christian types.
Yeah.
Is if they have a farm, they usually do that.
Yeah. It's one of those magic in plain sight, right. Everyday magic kind of things.
Right.
People don't think twice about doing it.
Right.
Because it's ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, it's
almost everywhere. Like a rabbit's foot is now.
Yeah. Now, there are still, I mean, I think there are still Christians who would see a rabbit's foot and go, no, 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 because they know the gambling association with
it.
Oh,
okay.
But for the most part, you're right. Like, I think
it's just mainstream is what I mean.
Exactly. You can say lucky rabbit's foot and nobody sits there and goes, I think you've got something else going on there.
Right.
Just like, man, it's a lucky rabbit's foot.
Right.
So no, I think you're dead right on that. Okay. What about some other tools?
All right. Well, here's an easy one. Candles.
Are those magical?
They can be.
How so?
Well, for me, usually it's in the dressing of it. The anointing, some may call it.
How is the American version of using candles different than the European? How so?
Well, in hoodoo, you dress it up or down depending on your need.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let me see if I remember this. If you're wanting to get rid of something, you go down because it's going down into the earth. It's pulling, you know, whatever you want out. Into the earth.
Yes.
And so if you need something, you're going to pull it out of the earth. So you're going to, you know, dress the candle upwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember where I read this, but I'm fairly positive it was Wiccan. It was, you take the oil, you start from the center, and you work out both ways. So.
I've seen that in a lot of Wiccan manuals. I've seen at least one hoodoo spell where you do that too, but it's for a very specific type of magic, and I think it's a confusion spell.
Well, that would make sense.
Right. So, I mean, that makes total sense. It might also have been a reversing spell, but it is not, it was like, you were exactly right, I think, in saying, you know, up to bring it to you, down to get rid of it.
Right.
It's kind of, it's a dirty motion.
It is a dirty motion. We did it one time, we did a candle dressing, I felt really dirty doing it.
It looks kind of filthy. Looks like you ain't right.
So what about Saint candles?
Saint candles come in more in the Curan de Rismo brujeria side of things.
Uh-huh.
Although they are in hoodoo, and especially New Orleans style, New Orleans hoodoo. Saints are petitions for specific needs, specific wants, specific desires. For example, St. Michael the Archangel is often incorporated into protection spells.
Mm-hmm.
You would get his candle, burn it. And the fun thing about those is, like, around here you can go in the grocery store, and I'm talking, like, the grocery store where you buy, like, your bread and your milk and, you know, fairly mainstream grocery stores, and you can find Virgin of Guadalupe, St. Michael,
yep.
Burning, was it Sacred Heart of Jesus, I mean, you can find a few of these Saint candles just on the grocery store shelves.
Yep, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, they're common enough that you can burn, and you can, they even come with the little prayers on them. And I mean, that's just straight up magic.
Yep,
and it's very, very common in this part of the country.
Yep, but I don't think a lot of people see them that way. I think a lot of people see them as sort of the Catholic angle,
mm-hmm.
like because there are so few Catholics in our part of the world, part mm-hmm. of the country, that they think, oh, you know, those are just candles, and they burn them sort of like a little bit of a tribute to the saints.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I always thought before mm-hmm. I really started studying this, and now I know different.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a little from column A, a little from column B.
Right.
There are plenty of people who, you know,
just do it that way.
Are good Catholics, and they're not, you know, I think if you're burning the Virgin of Guadalupe, for the most part, you're aware that there's something slightly more than just a simple religious devotional to it, because there is this sort of pseudo-magical cult around her. That's not to say that everyone who's burning a Virgin of Guadalupe candle is necessarily practicing brujeria or anything.
Right.
But I'm saying that there's usually a context. That being said, that, you know, there are plenty of Catholics who would burn these just as devotional candles, mm-hmm. but I would argue that there's an element of magic to that anyway.
Oh, yeah, I would too.
So that's just kind of how I take
it. But we've talked about that before.
Yeah, we have. And then there are definitely those people who, you know, burn these candles specifically for magical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, while we're on that subject, in hoodoo, there is a strong tradition of using oil lamps mm-hmm. in magic. Actually, there's a stronger tradition of using oil lamps than there is of using candles if you go back into the early part of the 19th century. Because because candles would have been more expensive than oil lamps.
Yeah.
Because most people would have had one oil lamp and could just afford to buy, they get the oil to burn in the lamp.
Because
you could use different kinds of rendered fats
mm-hmm. and
burn those in the lamp. Whereas candles were expensive.
Right.
Because, you know, they had to be dipped. They're a very time-consuming process. Beeswax was expensive then as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to get candles. So they would use these oil lamps and infuse them with magical herbs and then burn those for specific purposes.
It's a good idea.
It's a great idea. I've actually recently came into a couple of oil lamps and I've been using those.
Oh, really?
And they're a lot of fun to use.
My grandparents used to have them. I always loved them, but mm-hmm. never thought about magical-wise. That's awesome.
Absolutely could be. And, I mean, the other cool thing about them, and this is true of some of those saint candles as well, you can leave them burning unattended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won't want to leave your house necessarily,
right.
but you can go to the other room. You know, if you're cooking dinner in the kitchen, you know, you can keep an eye in the living room every once in a while. And those kinds of things are not nearly as likely to cause a fire.
Right. It's like a taper candle.
Exactly. A taper candle, if it falls over, you're done.
Right.
These things are sort of designed so that they'll go out if they fall over.
Yeah.
And oil lamps are just not going to, you know, you don't have to worry about one way or the other.
Right.
They're just designed not to do that. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. What's next on the list?
Mojo bags.
All right. Mojo bags, are they a tool? Or are they a spell? Or are they a little from column A, or are they a little from column B?
You could argue both. Because, I mean, you do have to make, you know, a mojo bag, obviously. You know, you get the herbs, which is an ingredient. But then you have the fabric, which, you know, is very mundane. But then when you decide, okay, this is for the mojo bag, it sort of becomes magical. So, I don't know. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more it's not a tool to me.
It's not a tool. It's a spell.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would take the opposite tack.
All right.
Not to say that all mojo bags are tools, but to say that for most people, they're not going to have... You're not going to have 20 mojo bags.
No.
You're just not going to have that many mojo bags lying around your house. Most people have one, two, maybe three that they keep on themselves at all times. They use on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I consider them a tool.
Okay.
And I also consider them a tool because of a way that they were sort of presented to me that I've only recently come to understand. And that is that they're, rather than being these little spells that you deploy, they're actually tiny little houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're like tiny little spirit houses for very specific spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And you put all the right ingredients into that thing, into that little house, and whatever little spirit you're trying to draw is going to come take up residence in that. So you've got these little spirits that are with you all the time and work with you and help you in those specific
ways. To give you what you're asking for.
And I love that point of view on it. I think that's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally fits within the tool thing for me, because that's something I feel about tools, is that they develop their own spiritual inhabitant. They, you know, you have a broom that's your ward of the house that protects your house. It belongs with you.
It does make sense.
Yeah. So, well, the animal parts, I think the animal parts are inhabited to some extent by those animals.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that.
So that's kind of how I feel about those. All right. Anything else?
This one isn't really a tool, but I guess some people could see it as one, so I figured we'd cover it. Jewelry.
Okay. How so?
Well, I know a lot of people have a piece of jewelry that they feel really close to, or they just really like to use in their magical practice because they feel it enhances their magic or increases their power. Or
mm-hmm. Can you give an example?
Well, I mean, a lot of people wear pentacles or pentagrams mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call it.
Or crosses, even.
Could be. Yeah, even crosses. Yeah, definitely.
Stars of David.
And also, it's like a, to me, it's sort of like a reminder mm-hmm. to yourself, like a little, hey, remember me?
mm-hmm. Well, I know that you have a ring that I see you wear every once in a while. It's kind of your witchy ring.
Which one?
It's the one that has the pinnacle on it.
Oh, the star?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a circle, so it does look like it. Uh-huh. Yeah. I like that one because it's very sort of hidden.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an obvious mm-hmm. pinnacle at all.
Yeah, it's not bling at all. No. It's just this little subtle ring, but if you look at it, if you know what you're looking for, mm-hmm. it sort of stands out.
Right.
Which that's the kind of stuff I love.
Right. I have another one that I really like. It's a snake, and it wraps around. It's not eating its tail. It's like two separate sections, like uh-huh. where the head is here, and then the tail kind of comes around next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an.
For all you listening at home, that was a very well illustrated hand gesture.
So yeah, I tend to go for rings more than I do necklaces, but that's just personal mm-hmm. preference. But anyway, you know, a lot of people, like I said, feel close to one piece of jewelry that they like. So that can be almost a tool. Because it does help you in your magical practice, so.
Yeah. And I mean, I would go so far as to say there is, you know, there's charm bracelets as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those,
yeah.
You know, people collect those, and sometimes those have very powerful significance.
Right.
Sort of reminders of your magical abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So, all right. Those are all the tools you'll ever need to practice magic. But we hope that does cover a few things for you all.
Yeah. And I guess after this, we'll be doing our witchcraft and spelled out segments.
Yes. I wonder what they'll be about. Stay tuned, and you too shall know the mysteries of Nouvelle Witchery.
My name is Jillian, and I am inviting you to join me on Iron Powaka Radio for a journey into random topics and spontaneous observations about spirituality, nature, and navigation through life, all from a girl with a rather wicked perspective. You can find my adventures at ironpowaka.com and download me at iTunes. So take some time out of your own mind and step into my collective. Iron Powaka Radio is tuned in to turn on.
For this segment on witchcraft, we are talking about, you know, we're talking about tools today, so I thought we would talk about making your own tools, and just some ideas for doing that. One that I'm actually working on right now is I'm knitting a cingulum, and if you knit, you know, you could just do an I-cord, if you know what that is. But if you don't, you know, no big deal, you can always braid it, which I think would be especially powerful if you took three strands mm-hmm. and then, you know, braided those together and then braided those three. I mean, did that three times.
Yeah, so it would have nine.
Yeah, so it would have nine cords or nine plies, kind of. That would mm-hmm. be, you know, pretty cool. And next would be wands. That's a pretty easy one if you wanted to make a wand. Mm-hmm. I know that's not necessarily American, but, you know, we're talking about tools, I figure I can mention it. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a wand, I know there are some people who are very specific about wands and like how they are made and all that, But if you wanted to make an American style one, I would say think in terms of what you have available, mm-hmm. what's local to you, and, you know, what makes sense for what you're doing.
Right.
Just like you've come up with some really interesting improvised.
Yeah, we've used a dried rose stem mm-hmm. as a lawn before. And one time it was really powerful, and another it didn't really work. But to be fair, it didn't really need a wand at all.
Right. And that's a big part of having a magical tool is needing that.
Right,
tool.
Do you need it? Yeah. So, but, you know, of course you can do just a found stick. And then, you know, you can engrave it, or not engrave, but carve on it, or wrap like a ribbon or something like that around it. But, you know, it's like Corey said, or you can improvise, and you don't have to necessarily use just a found stick. You could do something else.
Yeah.
But what if you can't make it, you know? Then what? What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is a metal smither.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then everybody can make their own, you know, make their own knives or make their own iron. You're not going to go out and, you know, if you're not in the habit of regularly shoeing a horse,
right.
How are you going to get a horseshoe?
Exactly. So a big thing, I think, in magical practice is gifts.
Yeah.
I know Corey is a big gift giver, which makes it an awesome friend to be.
I'm a giver, what can I say?
It's like those, the five love languages?
I don't know. You guys have talked about she and my wife have talked about this. I don't know this
It's
thing.
An interesting book. It's about the ways that people show love, and one of them is gift giving. And the way that people feel love. And one of them is receiving gifts. And I am definitely a receiving gifts type of person. If that makes me materialistic, then...
And I am definitely a giving gifts type of person. So that worked out really well.
It's a good relationship.
Yeah. It's funny, though. Like, and this is totally off topic. Probably want to delete this. My wife is not a gift receiver type person. She likes gifts, but...
Is she a tasks person?
I think she's a physical touch person.
Oh.
And also a words person.
Oh.
So she wants those. And, you know, I'm fine with those, too. But, like, my thing is gifts.
Right.
So.
Funny.
So.
Okay, so gifts. Like, I know I've gotten some of my best tools as mm-hmm. gifts. You've given me a mortar and pestle,
mm-hmm.
which we didn't really talk about because they're not necessarily magical. Like, you use them to grind up herbs, which mm-hmm. the herbs themselves are magical. But, like, I like having it in my cabinet, but it's not, like... I don't know. It's not a broom. You know what I mean?
Right. Although I do think, like, you know, over time you would develop a relationship with it. So
I can see that, yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, I mean, you're using so many magical herbs in it. I can see it sort of being infused, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What else have I gotten?
But I think you make a good point with the gifts thing. I think it's really a good idea. If you have a group that you're interacting with,
mm-hmm.
you know, make it a habit to, you know, develop some gift giving.
Yeah.
Because you never know what kind of useful tools you'll get.
Right.
You know, if you start the practice of giving a gift, a lot of pagans really believe in a gift for a gift, and so they'll return that gift.
Mm-hmm. I've also gotten a brass chalice, like a long time ago. A boyfriend gave it to me.
That's cool.
Got some good boyfriend gifts.
Yeah, I've got some good gifts. Some very supportive boyfriends. Has your husband ever gotten you a magical gift?
I'm thinking.
I can see that.
You can't see my thinking face.
I can see the dribble running.
No, I don't think so. But he's understanding when I, like, when I say I'm going to get this for a magical purpose.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah, he doesn't necessarily feel like... He's like, yeah, get it if you want to get it.
Right.
Like, if you need it, you can get it.
Right. But, you know, you can't expect gifts from everybody to get, like... Like, what if you really want something? I'm a big believer in putting it out into the universe, and the universe will sort of find it for you.
Absolutely.
Like, Of course you have to do the looking yourself, but, like, say you need, you know, a horseshoe that's actually been on a horse, and you're in the city, and you don't know anybody like that, you mm-hmm. know, you could just... What I usually do is I think about it a lot, and I get almost sort of obsessed with it
uh-huh.
until I just... You know, I just keep thinking about it and thinking about it. It sort of builds.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, you're putting out those thoughts into the universe and hoping that they manifest. And, you know, a good place would be antique stores.
Yeah.
pawn shops, that type of thing, you know, usually you find what you're looking for pretty fast, especially if you feel like a need for it.
Right.
I've found. I don't know about anybody else, but...
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Have you ever had that happen?
Yes, absolutely. I remember when I... one of the things I was looking for a long time was a cauldron. And it hadn't occurred to me at that point yet that a Dutch oven was the same thing as a cauldron. Because I was stupid.
No, it's okay. We all get into our little ruts.
Yeah. And I was fairly young, and I was definitely like, you know, oh, I need... You know, a cauldron that looks like a cauldron. And da, 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 da. Well, okay, so I really wanted a cauldron that looked like a cauldron. Those are not easy to find.
No, and they're expensive as
they're
all get out.
Extremely expensive. Okay, that year, my stepmother, for I think Christmas, gave me this like herbal bath thing.
Uh-huh.
It was this big thing of like it was locally handcrafted, like herbal shampoo and herbal soaps and like men's care products and everything. Contained in a green iron cauldron. And, I mean, it was a decorative cauldron with the little, like, bulbed sides and the lip and everything. And the 3 feet.
Uh-huh.
And everything.
The one that we've used?
Yes.
Isn't there, like, pentagrams on that?
There might be, but, I mean, it was definitely a cauldron. Like, that's just it. Is like,
what the heck?
And she didn't, I mean, she absolutely would not have been like, oh, I want to get him something witchy. It would have been much more like, oh, I think that that's herbal and natural, and he would get into that.
Right.
And so that's why she bought it.
Yeah.
And
that's a great example. That's a great example of it. I remember, this isn't necessarily like a witchy tool, but I really, wanted, like a poison ring in high school. And,
that could be a witchy tool. It's
yeah.
The jewelry that we were talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of was that for me.
Yeah.
But, I know some people also put, like, a little piece of cotton with their perfume on it.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's, like, jewelry designed for holding perfume, but you can use your poison ring that way.
Yeah.
So I sort of had that idea. But anyway, and so I thought about it, and I got it got a different poison ring from two different people that Christmas.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm a big believer in putting it out into the universe, and it'll come to you, kind of. Mm-hmm. You still have to put in the legwork, but...
Right. You know, but once you've, you know, put your need out there, and, like, I would suggest, you know, writing a letter saying what you want, or, like, draw it out, or do something like that, just so that you know what you want.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I think that there's something about that that then makes you more likely to go, you know, walking by an antique shop.
Right, and be like, oh, let me go look in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you'll feel the pull for it.
Exactly. And, you know, if that doesn't work, there's always places online that you can order things.
Mm-hmm.
And they can have just as much power as, you know, a found object.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it really depends on the relationship you develop with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over time, you really can. Like, I think I got your mortar and pestle at, like, World Market. But, I mean, it's a good mortar and pestle.
It really
over
is.
Over time, it will develop that connection with you. So, pretty cool.
All right, so that's it for witchcraft. Next up is spelled out. Yay!
Fabulous piece that is. Love it. All right, we'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, this is Velma Nightshade from Witches Brew Haha, inviting you to join me each week as I discuss all things witchy. Witches Brew Haha reaches from the controversial topics to the ridiculous reality that being a modern witch entails. From book reviews to hot-button pagan news, from stone and herb studies to practical magic tips and advice, Witches Brew Haha is a bewitching blend of the best a magical life has to offer. Find it on iTunes or at witchesbrewhaha.com. And remember, never be afraid to think outside the cauldron. Blessed be.
All right, on Spelled Out today, we're going to talk about a broom spell. Now, this is just a very, very simple, I mean, I don't even know that I would 100% call it a spell.
Okay.
But it's a practice that I do, and that I've seen a lot of people do, which basically involves you take the broom, and it works best if it's either your most loved, most used household broom, and again...
Like to actually sweep up dirt with?
To actually sweep up dirt with, or a broom specifically created for magical purposes.
Okay. So and a besom.
Besom. However you want to say it. So you take that and you put it in the corner of your room, preferably behind a door.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's there for protection. And what it is it's sort of, It's like we were talking about with the mojo bags. It's a spirit house. There's a specific kind of spirit, the sort of domestic spirit that lives in that broom and that will protect your home because it is its home too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the basic functionality of the broom. But then there's some other little tricks that can kind of go with it.
Okay.
You can lay that broom across the door and it can prevent things from entering. Anything that means you harm. It's much like using the red brick dust.
Oh.
So only things, and that's sort of the, you know, when you leap the broom together, it's because it's two people in love going into the same place. So only things that love you are going to get across that broom.
Oh, neat.
So, and that's a fairly oversimplified way of looking at that, but that's the basic structure, and you can put it either in front of the door, on the ground, or over the door and get the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite tricks with the broom is if you have company you don't want in your home, or if you're expecting company that you don't want in your home, you flip the broom upside down so the bristles are pointing up behind the door, and then that company will leave much, much, much faster. And I have used that many, many times, and I think it's like a 99% success rate.
How do you do it without...
Looking like, I don't want you to stay.
Looking really conspicuous, yeah.
Most of the time I've done it because I know somebody's coming that I don't want to deal with for very long.
Oh.
And so I'll flip it so that they'll leave. But, I mean, that's not always true. Sometimes it really is just one of those things where, like, I wait till their back's turned, flip it, and get out of the way.
Hmm.
And just let it go. So.
Okay.
I know now every time you come over, you're going to be looking to see, like, is that broom
I'm going to cry if it's flipped.
He doesn't want me around. That may just mean somebody has been here that I didn't want around. But that's the basic functionality of it. And as far as the being flipped upside down, this is just sort of my hazarding a guess.
Okay, I'd be interested to hear it.
But I think it functions much like burying a statue of St. Joseph upside down in your front yard works when you're trying to sell a home. Which is to say, you're making that spirit uncomfortable so that it will help you.
Oh, okay.
So it's because it wants you to write it. It wants you to put it upright again, and it knows that you'll do it.
So in Catholicism, do you unbury it when you sell your house?
That's what I've always heard, but
Do you dig it up?
Yeah. Do you exhume it?
Yeah.
That's my understanding of it.
Okay, have no idea. I wasn't sure.
But I mean, I think I've also seen a couple of people that say they leave it buried, and I'm like, I imagine that would probably lead to trouble down the line. But at any rate, I do know that turning saints' pictures upside down until they grant you the request is fairly common.
Oh, okay.
That
makes sense then.
Yeah, and so I've seen that in that context. And I would say that even when you flip the broom upside down, it's kind of doing the same thing. You're saying, all right, household spirit, I'm about to enter an uncomfortable situation and I need you to help me with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can see that really working for a broom, especially because it's sort of precarious to have it upside down since it's just the handle.
Right.
So.
It's bristly up top. So
yeah.
There's that spiking factor. It's sort of porcupine quills working to repel somebody. But yeah, so that's basically how that spell works. And there's all sorts of other little things that go along with brooms. But that's like primarily how I use my broom.
Mm-hmm. They're just so iconic.
They are. They're perfectly witchy. They're just such perfectly witchy things.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because recently I hosted a full moon gathering, and one of the things that I insisted people do is everybody bring a broom from your house. And the way I put it was like, I don't care if it's your you know, grandma's antique broom that's been in your family for generations, or if it's your favorite dustbuster, you know, bring it, put it behind the door. And you have all these brooms piled together behind a door.
Yeah.
Very few things are going to look more witchy than that.
It's true.
It's very cool. It was very cool. I dug it.
Yeah.
So that's it for Spelled Out. We're going to, I guess, move on into the closing of the show.
Yeah.
Happy trails. All that.
Last one for a little while, anyway.
I know, it's kind of sad.
It is. I will miss doing this, I really do. But, like I said, it's only 2 months. Yes. We will survive.
Yes, and like we said, we're going to try to do something in that interim.
At least one special episode would be nice.
Exactly. The problem is we can't guarantee a schedule.
Right.
So, we're going to take those 2 months and just do our best to get something really cool out. Mm-hmm. And if not, then we'll definitely be back in August with lots of coolness.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yes.
So, but we thank you so much for listening and for having some patience with us during this trying time. we know that, you know, we're still a fairly young and new podcast, and so taking a hiatus like this could be a big turnoff, but I'm trusting that our listeners and our readers understand. They also need to be cool people.
Well, you'll come back even smarter.
Exactly. And even more pompous than before.
That's right.
Fantastic. And we just lost our audience. But yeah, so thank you for all understanding that. If you want to contact us in the 2 month interim or anytime, really, feel free to do so at compassandkey@gmail.com.
And there's the blog, which, like Corey said, will not be updated as frequently, but, you know, we're still going to be checking it. And that's newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
So, we'll hope to see you on the internets. And we thank you so much for listening.
Mm-hmm.
As always.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.